What's good, everybody? Pete and Rob back with you, NHL Fantasy on Ice. We hope you had a happy Thanksgiving around the U.S. And Robbie, how's it going, man? Back for some rankings talk and everything across the board as we get closer to the start of the season.
Feeling good, Pete. Welcome back to you as well. And yeah, I was looking up over the weekend. It looks like we got some position updates in fantasy, some pretty exciting ones. With a couple big name players, I guess we can just dive in at the top of the list with Steven Stamkos, who actually, Pete, lost his center eligibility finally. So now he's left wing, right wing. Any others on the list maybe stand out to you?
Well, that one for sure. I mean, last year we saw him exclusively play the wing, but a guy that was playing and was one of the elite centers in the league for so many years, right up there with Crosby and Malkin for so long, especially from a goal scoring standpoint and power play production. So now he's either going to be the first line left wing, right, with Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov, or if they stick with Andre Palat in his spot, they played so well in the playoffs, he might be the second line right wing with Alex Killorn and Anthony Cirelli, who they still have to lock up, current RFA. So yeah, I think Stamkos is in that next phase of his career where he's still the sniper we've come to know, right? As good as he's ever been, of course. Like last year when he was healthy, he was tremendous, way better than a point per game. So now it's like the fantasy world is reflecting on his center days, and now he's going to be near the top of our wing rankings, whichever one he ends up on moving forward.
So we have him at 50 overall, which is pretty fair. I mean, considering that, I think you touched on it, just that top line with Kucherov, Point, and Palat. I mean, they were so dominant together. They had great chemistry. So by all accounts, you probably think that that's going to carry over when the season starts sometime in January, hopefully. And then I think, you know, Stamkos being potentially now a second liner, you know, I don't know if that necessarily changes his stock. As long as he can stay healthy and in the lineup, he should be a top goal scorer for them. I mean, on that first power play, Pete, you get the great exposure anyway, right? So I wouldn't look at this as a, wow, this really hinders him type of thing. But I think this is good overall for the Tampa Bay Lightning and for the player who, if he is on the second line, maybe they can preserve him a little bit with some minute management.
And the Lightning in general this year are a really interesting team because now they've gotten over the hump. So does that mean they regress a little bit? I actually think it would probably mean they have the monkey off their back and maybe they could put up those gaudy fantasy totals without worrying about what might go wrong in the playoffs and keeping their, what's that?
I'm telling you to stop because you know what? Their bellies are full. It's regression, full on regression from the Tampa Bay Lightning. They won the cup, bellies full. Think about it. After Thanksgiving, you have a big turkey leg, you have your mashed potatoes, your stuffing. You're full, you're fat and happy. In a shortened season, I think you're going to see some regression from the Tampa Bay Lightning personally. Robbie may differ with that.
I think it's interesting because last season, they started quote unquote slowly because Kucherov was only playing what, like just shy of a point per game. And then 2 weeks later, they all exploded. Kucherov played at a ridiculous clip and there was no problem. So I think maybe there could be a slight hangover in that regard, if you want to call it that, just because of the, you know, kind of different schedule now that we're going to implore. But when you have guys like Kucherov who, you know, if he's 100% on his game or not, he's putting up a point per game. And then you have guys like Braden Point now, who I think, Bob, is the main nucleus of this argument here, that he just looks like such a different player than we saw early in his career, where he is now entering the potential elite and superstar level, where I think that alone can offset any regression from the Lightning.
I think you used the right term, and I was looking for it. It's a hangover. It's a Stanley Cup hangover, and I could see that happening. Now, Braden Point might be the exception because he has just his level of game is exploding. So, listen, guys, we don't know what's going to happen at the end of the day. I'm leaning towards regression. Robbie is on the fence a little bit, brings up a good point with Point. And Petey, you're leaning which way?
Well, I just think these guys always put up high offensive totals in their sleep. And now, I mean, the only thing that could really hurt them to me is if it's a really condensed schedule and maybe Vasilevsky's playing too much and playing too many second of back-to-backs or something like that. And maybe an injury to Hedman, like we've seen in recent years. The good thing is they have some time here to rest up and recuperate. And I just think that like finally getting over the hump will help them, especially spreading out the scoring, right? For so many years, Robbie, it was just their line one or just their power play one. I mean, they showed the ability in the playoffs to run so much deeper than that. And still most of the core coming back, right? Who left? Shattenkirk? I mean, there's not really, it hasn't been blown up quite yet. They got Sergachev on the bridge deal, which was really important. So yeah, I think the Lightning are still going to be one of the five best teams in the NHL, guaranteed, absolute floor. And yeah, fantasy owner's delight. You could take Braden Point in the first round, late first round, early second round, after taking Kucherov in one of the first three picks, I think.
Exactly. No question about it. I mean, he entered the league looking like maybe a 65, 70 point guy. Now you could say 95, maybe even 100 over an 82 game season is doable for Points. So yeah, I think the Lightning will be just fine after some time, but I want to shift the conversation now to the Philadelphia Flyers, Pete. Claude Giroux is now a center left wing. He used to have the benefit of being a tri-eligible forward, which, as we know, is probably the most valuable thing in fantasy when you can plug and play like that on any given night. Now, Giroux did have less points last season. He had his lowest total since the lockout shortened season in 2012-13. So, you know, I think Giroux now, with the lower point totals, with the just two positions now, he's certainly losing that value. He's no longer elite in fantasy. But I do think, Pete, just to kind of round this out, the Flyers are a very safe team now. They've got a lot of forward depth. And I don't think it would surprise anybody to see Giroux play at that point per game or just shy of it, like we have seen him do multiple times in his career.
Yeah, the one wrinkle that I like better for Giroux's sake is if he's always with Couturier for the most part. And then the right wing, is it going to be the aging Jacob Voracek, who each year puts up decent fantasy numbers but seems to be on the decline? Or is it going to be Travis Konechny, who had a breakout regular season last year, mostly playing with Kevin Hayes down the stretch of the season, who was their big offseason acquisition the previous year, worked out really well for the Flyers to get them to be really one of the best teams in the entire Eastern Conference regular season and, of course, the postseason where they won the round robin. So I think if Konechny, who's still emerging, still has a higher ceiling, if he ends up on that same line with Giroux, those guys have played together many years, especially when Konechny was developing early on and Giroux was still playing center. I just want to see Konechny still with Giroux if we're looking at a bounce back season from Claude.
Yeah, and I just wrote a preview for the Flyers for their fantasy outlook this season, and it kind of made me wonder, Pete, if fantasy-wise, this isn't so great for the team overall, because you might not have the, you know, 75, 80-point guy in either Couturier or Giroux this season, but you might have a couple guys finishing around the 65-point mark. Again, this is projections for an 82-game season, just to keep that in mind. So I think this is great for them from a team perspective, right, that we're kind of seeing Konechny rise up. We're seeing guys like Lindblom be capable of scoring, you know, 45, 50 points. Like, that's great from a team perspective, but I think when you look at fantasy value, you're not going to be able to draft these guys and expect that over a point per game, a crazy value that you might have in seasons past.
Right. And what is the Flyers' top six, top nine going to look like once they start elevating players like their prospects, still rookie eligible Morgan Frost? They also have Farabee, who we talked about as a deep sleeper, Oscar Lindblom. As long as he's healthy, he's going to be one of their leading goal scorers, without a doubt. That's the stage of his career that he's at. So he's a top level type goal scorer. So if, you know, do you break up that Couturier Giroux type mold and maybe incorporate some youth, that could make it more interesting. Also could get some more out of some of those aging players and make your top nine forward group for the Philadelphia Flyers one of the best in the entire NHL this year.
I'd like to see that, Pete. I would like to see the kind of that breaking of the mold and kind of getting those younger guys in better lineup positions. Will it happen? We shall see soon. Now, a couple other things I wanted to touch on here, just kind of round this thing out. Braden Schenn is no longer center left wing. He's center right wing. So not, you know, that's not going to do much for you in fantasy. Now, I do want to preface by saying all of these changes, so they can take away positions now in the offseason, but not in the regular season. They can only add positions in the regular season. So don't be alarmed. You know, if you maybe see something where you think a player is going to slot in on a different wing or something, they can always add that in the regular season. But for now, these are just basically either, you know, minor changes or having positions removed.
Yeah, interesting that Schenn lost left wing and added right wing. I know he played previous years, you know, with the Blues mostly center, but earlier in his career he was playing left wing. I guess maybe, you know, if Robert Thomas is playing a little center or something like that, maybe they, you know, play him at the right wing a little bit more. I think one of the most notable additions, one of the only additions, was Alexander Radulov gaining left wing where he was only right wing eligible. And when you look at Dallas's scope this year, kind of like, even though we like Khudobin to gain some value from the Bishop injury and Rupe Hintz to gain some value from Sagan's injury, it's not a great outlook in terms of losing two of your best players for large chunks of the season. So, yeah, I just think that that extra flexibility for Radulov, who's definitely capable of scoring 65, 70 points this year and maybe 25, 30 goals with some good power play production, maybe as more of a standalone individual who's kind of orchestrating the offense from him outside to the opposite wing and getting more out of the center that he's playing with. Like, to have that extra flexibility for Radulov makes me like him even more as a bounce back player for this regular season.
He might be the safest bounce back player on the list now, Pete, and having that dual eligibility, that flexibility, can go a long way to making that case too. I mean, this is a player that had 72 points in each season, 2018, 2017-18, and 2018-19. So the consistency was there. He just had a little bit of a lower shooting percentage. Obviously, Dallas had a little trouble getting those forwards to score last season. It wasn't just Radulov, right, that had that phenomenon happen. So I think with the guys on the back end now, Klingberg, Heiskanen, I know they played a lot of games in the postseason, but they've had plenty of time to rest now. They should all be fresh, and I think Radulov can really rise to that occasion, Pete, and be the guy there for the season, which, hey, in fantasy, that's what you want. You want to draft the guy. I love knowing that. It's like going back to Philadelphia. I don't love drafting Giroux. I don't love drafting Couturier so much anymore, and even Konechny, because I don't know who's going to be the guy. But for Dallas, it's clear cut now that Radulov should be the guy.
I agree with that for sure. And another guy that is very consistent, I think, he had that one down year, but William Nylander is no longer center eligible. He was tri-eligible last year, I believe, because he was playing a lot of left wing, but he's now like Stamkos. He's just left wing and right wing. So whether he ends up on Tavares's left side, or, you know, maybe his buddy Austin Matthews' left side at some point instead of Zach Hyman, there are some good options for Nylander as well. And, you know, he was pretty productive last year. The one down year was the year that he got the slow start after he had the contract holdout, right? So this guy, ever since entering the league, has been producing at that 60-point-plus clip in terms of his rate of production. So very consistent for one of the best offenses in the league in Toronto.
And the best exposure, really, too, when you think about it, because he can play either on the top line or the second line, no problem. Wherever they need him to play, he'll be on the top power play, too. So I think that this is crucial, Pete, when you get into this draft range, maybe around 75 to 100, maybe 110 overall, you've got to get guys in that range that can either carry maybe a bad team or guys that bring the top level exposure. And even though William Nylander doesn't have a lot of category coverage, he still has that safety net of playing with some of the best goal scoring centers in the league. So I think when you look at that range, you have to have a slam dunk pick. That's the range where you can't falter in drafts, right? I mean, that can really make or break your season. If you pick up a safe guy around the 65 point clip, 70 point, maybe even ceiling, you could really benefit in that range and help your fantasy season a lot. With a guy like William Nylander.
And Austin Matthews, just to be clear, so he's sixth in our overall rankings. And some people look at that and say, oh, the Maple Leafs are a, you know, perennial disappointment. They don't get anything done in the playoffs. But hey, this guy is no joke. He had 47 goals in a shortened season, which was only behind Pasternak and Ovechkin, who had 48 for the league lead. So you're talking about, even if you're just playing on power play one, like Nylander is with Austin Matthews, he is really that guy who we always talk about. Eichel, we always talk about some of these guys like Braden Point after the strong playoff, but Austin Matthews seems to be ready. If there's ever a, you know, a 82 game season on the horizon, this guy could score 60 goals. He's one of the only players in the league that could score 60 over a full season, I think.
Well, we're going to have to wait a year for an 82 game season, but Austin Matthews, if you're still throwing shade on this player, you got some problems. You got to reevaluate. You got to look internally and say, what is my problem if I'm throwing shade on Austin Matthews? I guess the biggest issue would be he's yet to win a playoff series. But from my perspective, Pete, he is at this point where he's going to hit another level probably. He's a great player, Austin Definitely. Matthews. And I think that Toronto Maple Leafs team, it's just a matter of time before all these players, you brought up William Nylander, all these players just hit their peak. Even Tavares, you know, finds something or finds his role on this team. And they just, away they go.
Well, in fantasy, you know, if Matthews scores 60 goals, I don't care what they do in the postseason. If I've got Matthews on my fantasy team, that's as far
exactly.
as I'm concerned.
Exactly, yeah, true.
Right, it just doesn't matter. So now, if you want to look at this list, go to NHL.com/fantasy. We also have the positional eligibility of the rookies on the list. Again, they're going to start out all one position, the rookies, but they can be added in the season, so don't fret too much about that. I want to turn the conversation here, guys, to most improved teams into this season. I think you could start with probably at the top of the list, Pete, a team in the Buffalo Sabres who added Taylor Hall. I think every time you and I speak about this team, every week that goes by, we feel better and better and better about them. Is there anything else on the Sabres maybe that we're overlooking here? Maybe it's a Linus Ullmark could have a big season. Is it a guy on the back end like Brandon Montour, one of those defensemen that could have a big season? Like, where do you see that value coming in now for one of the most improved teams in the Sabres?
Well, I definitely think there's once the team improves, actually improves on the ice, not just on paper entering the season, you're going to see the second line be really valuable. So you're going to see Jeff Skinner get back to 25, 30 goals. You're going to say whoever plays on that right side is going to have 45, 50 points because now they have Eric Staal. You're going to see not just one defenseman in Rasmus Dahlin be valuable, but maybe Rasmus Ristolainen, who has been kind of underwhelming for a few years now, even though he provides hits and some scoring and some power play production. He's not on power play one anymore. And so many people, you know, think the Sabres should trade that guy, but they've been patient with him to their credit. They've learned from, you know, some of the mistakes of the past, like trading Evander Kane and trading Ryan O'Reilly, who have gone other places and done big things. So yeah, I think that the depth scoring of the Sabres is the one thing that could really help them go over the top. Not just Eichel scoring 95 plus points like he was on pace for last year, but just like those secondary players. Even Dylan Cousins is a sneaky little rookie that people should watch out for, especially if he could land into that top six.
It's funny because when you were drafting from the Sabres before, outside of Eichel and Skinner, right, you weren't getting a whole lot. Now, in the span of 1 year, you can draft these guys throughout pretty much any round at any position and probably get some good value there. I love that you brought up Ristolainen because that's a player that mostly every fantasy owner who's at least had Ristolainen in the past few seasons has now written off because of the anchor in the plus-minus category. That should not be too much of a problem for the Sabres this year if we think that they're going to be as good as they are. So I love that you brought up the second line too. You can get your value there with Eric Staal in late rounds. You can get a guy like Sam Reinhart outside the top 100, and these guys should all return value. It's going to be a trickle down effect. When you make one big signing like that in Hall, usually the ripple down effect positively impacts each one of these guys. Even if it's not in points, it should be in categories like plus minus.
So the Sabres are your most improved team. Is that correct?
Both, yeah, they won the poll that we ran, and okay. I think we would both agree on that. I think that, you know, Robbie has had a strong case for Montreal with some of their additions at different positions. We also have Ottawa in the mix. You could call Ottawa an overlooked team, which is a separate story that we did, but with all their additions of Stützle in the draft and Matt Murray, Evgeny Dadonov, you know, some really nice pieces they've added to try to get back to fantasy relevance. So those are the top three teams, I think.
Yeah, I think Montreal is a good, I'm trying to think team-wise, Montreal has some players too, Suzuki, Kotkaniemi.
Yeah, so I really think this team, again, Mark Bergevin has kind of gotten criticism, but I don't think it's justified right now. You look at a guy like Tyler Toffoli coming in on the right side there, he can score with anybody really in the league when he's hot. So look for that to be a great, not only DFS implication, but season long for Toffoli there too. I love this player outside the top 150 overall. If you can get him there, you're going to get value. And he should have the top 6 minutes guaranteed on this team, I think, to really kind of be a good fit for Montreal. And then now you have a guy like Josh Anderson coming in, also plays on the right side, which, yeah, it's getting a little heavy on that side. But with his hits coverage, Pete, he's one of the guys in the league, maybe one of two or three, that can rack up a ton of hits and a ton of goals in a season. So if you look at Josh Anderson and you say this guy's going to score 20 goals and he's going to have, you know, maybe two hits per game, that's going to be a top finish in fantasy guaranteed. So you have to think about this maybe not from the lens of how successful they're going to be points wise, but for how many players are going to return value in fantasy. And it's going to be a lot this year.
That's a good case for Montreal. I mean, they are right in the mix for sure.
I like how their moves translate to reality. For fantasy-wise, I just worry about who's playing with who. And, you know, they have Gallagher, of course, opposite Tatar on the top line. They have Suzuki, who we really like. But then they have Drouin, too. And they have, you know, some other guys deeper down, like Joel Armia, who has shown like he should maybe play on the second line when he's healthy. So it's all going to be like, how do the lines sort out? And can any individual player other than Brendan Gallagher put up monster fantasy numbers? I'm not so sure of that. The one thing with Montreal that I think you could really tap into at a good value is not only to get Carey Price in the middle rounds of your draft outside the top 50, but then also get Jake Allen. Because, right, Robbie, we did the goalie tandem rankings for the first time ever on NHL.com/fantasy. And we had Montreal on the cusp of the top 10. And that was the one team that fans kind of were on us about, that they should be in the top five. I think they could finish there, but I think you could still get some good value on their goaltending in drafts.
Let Claude Julien work out all the chess pieces on the board. I think they have a nice collection of players and the mastermind. I'm going to call him a mastermind because I'm going to go after him this week, actually, for NHL at the Rink. The chances of me getting him on the program, we'll see. Claude Julien, the message is out to you. I want him on the podcast so you could talk about all these matchups and line matchups and juggling whatnot. But I think they have a nice collection of players.
It's a fair point, though, that they do have a lot of guys, and it might be hard to emerge as that one guy. If there's going to be one player I think that has a huge season for Montreal, I would put my chips in the basket of Nick Suzuki. I just think that what we saw out of this player in the postseason, he looked like a number one center. He was playing 18 minutes a game in the postseason, which is that's a big deal for a young player. So I think that would be the guy. It's funny, though, Pete, because Thomas Tatar led them in scoring last year. He almost played at a point per game. I think he was just like 6 or 7 points shy of that. But I don't view him or any of these other guys necessarily as big point players. I just don't see that. Like Toffoli, for me, if he's got 20 goals, you know, 5 to 10 power play goals, I'm happy with that, right? Because you're going to get value there. But you're not going to get a huge ceiling. So I think Suzuki's really, you know, maybe sadly the only player that has a huge ceiling on the Habs. Just so that we're clear on that, I wouldn't put too much stock into one of these players in particular, but I think when you're drafting around the 100, 110 mark, when you start getting these guys, it's going to be very safe for you.
And speaking of safety, we actually were having a debate when we were doing the defenseman rankings yesterday, Robbie. We had Adam Fox, who has more of a ceiling from the Rangers, against Jeff Petrie, who plays, you know, technically in the pecking order behind Shea Weber offensively, but is really consistent and brings hits and power play points. You know, where do you stand on that debate? Because I think even though we maybe like Fox a little bit, I think Petrie is one of those core guys for Montreal that speaks to their consistency and why we're excited about them as a team this year.
I'd rather play it safe. I think drafting a forward that I know is going to kind of get me in that 20 goal, you know, with some hits range. But for when it comes to a defenseman, I'd rather roll the dice here and go with Adam Fox. I think, Pete, if we had a list of players that we have a good gut feeling about this year, Fox would be right up there among the top. That spot on the first power play that D'Angelo was great at last season, I think Fox could be better at this season. He just has a more well-rounded game. I think he's got some of the top vision at the position already, which is high praise for the player. And he just has such a high ceiling to grow into. He's produced at every level he's ever played. And with these guys on the front end now, with Panarin and Zibanejad, I mean, and Lafreniere coming in there, Chris Kreider is great. I would just rather have that exposure with Adam Fox, even if he's not on the top power play, than Jeff Petrie, who, for all the right reasons, now has become one of the safest players at the position the past 2 or 3 seasons. But give me Adam Fox.
I agree. I think that definitely Tony DeAngelo is bound for some regression here, just because, I mean, he's not going to finish top 5 in defenseman scoring or power play points, whatever it was. I think he was top 10 in both of those key categories. But yeah, Fox is a part of that present and future. You get so excited about the Rangers forward group, and they should have 3 strong lines with 3 strong left wings and some underrated center depth and stuff like that. But my main concern with the Rangers is not their goaltending or their forward group. It's their defense. And Fox is that one glimmer of hope that could not only right the ship compared to the playoffs from last year, but he could emerge as their number one defenseman ahead of Trouba in terms of minutes per game this year and ahead of D'Angelo on the power play and in points and power play points. So that kind of maturation, that emergence as the all-around number one defenseman for one of the best offenses in the league could be Adam Fox as early as this season, I think.
Agreed wholeheartedly. Now we can shift the conversation to most overlooked teams in fantasy. Again, these are teams, this list is available on nhl.com/fantasy, but these are teams that basically you can get a lot of value from, mostly in later rounds, that people are just maybe sleeping on at this time of year. Now, our poll, we had the Minnesota Wild, Los Angeles Kings, or San Jose Sharks as the top three choices. The Wild won the poll. So I'll turn it to you, Pete. Make the case for the Minnesota Wild this season.
Well, look at the moves they made in the offseason. You know, I know they traded away Staal, but they got a number one goalie that they're calling in Talbot. They got some decent center options to mix and match, whether it's Marcus Johansson, Nick Bjugstad, they got in a trade with the Penguins, and Nick Bonino. These are guys that have been around the block many times for successful teams in the past that I think could help them bridge the gap in their rebuild and stay relevant with inclusion of Kirill Kaprizov, who's probably going to play on the top line first power play the second that he joins that group for a regular season game. So we're excited about his ceiling this year. And look at how Fiala bounced back, how he broke out last year, excuse me. And then, you know, even at goaltending, they signed Talbot to a short-term deal, but they also have that kid, Kaapo Kähkönen, another prospect. Marco Rossi, another highly touted prospect. I mean, this team is loaded, even though they're in a rebuild. The only question is their center depth, but I think they have the guys to plug and play there.
Every couple of years, you get a guy coming over from the KHL, whether it was Panarin, whether it was Kuznetsov. Now it's Kaprizov, and he's in that conversation right with those guys. He's not going to skip a beat, and I don't really think it's going to matter too much who's his center. I think as long as they can feed him the puck, he's going to put it in the back of the net. So I'm really excited about this Wild team. I think it's going to take a year or two, maybe a year and a half, to really translate to actual success. But in terms of fantasy value here, I have no problem going back to the well with Kevin Fiala this season, and I absolutely have no problem with reaching for Kaprizov right around the top 100 or even inside of it, closer to draft day when I might know their line combination. So I think you brought up to Cam Talbot. I was looking at his numbers last season. We're actually pretty good, Pete. So I do think that this is an underrated option. If you can get, maybe you get into a little bit of a jam, you skip out on the second goalie position until the one of the last rounds. If you can get Cam Talbot there, I think you're going to be safe with that just because he plays behind such a solid D core.
Yeah, I like the Wild to stay in contention this year, like they played after firing Boudreau and bringing in Dean Evason. And, you know, Bill Guerin seems to have them on the right track. Like, I know Bobby has been preaching, you know, ad nauseum at times, but he has them on the right path to success here for sure.
The thing with the Minnesota Wild, which we saw last year and they improved, they turn these games into coin flips. How many times did they win as an underdog? Because they keep the game close, very similar to the Islanders a few years back, even where the Islanders would level the playing field with their style of play, their defensive style of play. And that is the best case for Talbot, because after watching him in the playoff series, you're like, oh my God, how is this guy going to be a number one goalie anywhere? But Robbie, you look at his numbers, they're not bad. They're only going to improve, you know, playing behind that defensive team that Billy G has built. Billy G has built with a couple game breakers too. So you get that little, you get that system, you get a couple game breakers. Fiala broke out last year, maybe a couple more this year. They'll be in the mix.
I want to add LA to that mix real quick before we move on to goalie tandems. LA, I just think, has the great veteran presence there of those guys that are cup-winning players in Kopitar, Doughty, Quick. But now you're mixing in some fresh young players like Byfield. Olimata, I think, is going to be a good fit, actually, there, Pete, at the defense position. And then you've got guys, too. Alex Iafallo, he was scoring goals last season. Then you have more prospects in the pipeline. Turcotte, Gabe Vilardi, and then Anderson Dolan, who's an underrated name there at the center position. So I think this LA team this year, I would actually have voted for them in that poll if it were me choosing. I just think that they have the security of the proven guys at good positions, Pete, to really help out these young players make a transition in year one.
And they also have that kid, Carl Grundstrom, that they got in the Jake Muzzin trade. So, yeah, their defense is not what it used to be. That's the one concern with LA. Like, they have Doughty, but Olimata might be their second best defenseman after in recent years they traded away Jake Muzzin and Alec Martinez last year to the Golden Knights. So that's my one concern with them. But if you're talking about, like we mentioned, Montreal, goalie tandems that are top 10 or outside that have a chance to catapult this year, I actually kind of like that LA Kings goalie tandem of Jonathan Quick and Cal Peterson. Nobody's going to be drafting those guys. You could probably, like, if you want to take one goalie in the first, like, 10 rounds, and then you want to lock those two guys up, and maybe, like, one of them emerges as a fantasy-relevant player, or they emerge as a tandem worth owning, and they end up coming back and making the playoffs this year, you could really stack up your forward and defense core to be the best in your fantasy league, and then you can get by with goaltending if you pick the right guy in the first 10 rounds, and then if you strike on these LA Kings who have the core in place. And, you know, kind of like the Wild, we didn't mention Parisi and Suter, but it helps during a rebuild to have those guys who are still producing near the height of their careers. And I think Kopitar, certainly. Doughty was down a little bit last year, but Kopitar is still playing the best hockey of his career right now.
Cal Peterson looked pretty legitimate, and didn't they win like seven straight before the pause? They started to come together a little bit. That would be a team, if I see a plus number next to that price, just like the Minnesota Wild last year, I'm taking them early in the season because they have some good players. They're coming together, and Cal Peterson looked pretty legitimate. We'll see if he could sustain it, but he looked okay between the pipes.
And they have so many young players coming in that I think they could benefit from maybe a condensed schedule where they're playing more games in a shorter amount of time. I think those young players are going to help them a lot this season. So they are 22nd on our goalie tandem rankings, which is, you know, right around the range of some playoff teams, even ahead of some playoff teams, Pete, that we would think that would qualify this season. So that kind of says it all to me. Now, first on the list is the Vegas Golden Knights with Robin Lehner, with Marc-Andre Fleury. The addition of Pietrangelo solidified that if you had any doubts. But to me, Pete, that's the clear-cut number one tandem this season in fantasy.
Yeah, they now have Pietrangelo and Shea Theodore and Alec Martinez. They lost Nate Schmidt, but they still upgraded. And that's what you look for, right? You look that they didn't, you know, pull the plug on Marc-Andre Fleury. Robin Lehner, I guess, after the playoffs had some sort of an injury that was minor that he's probably going to be ready for the start of the season. But hey, if Leonard misses any time, you still have Marc-Andre Fleury, who's a top 5-10 goalie at the bare minimum in fantasy every single year when he's healthy. So yeah, I love that tandem. Number two on the list, Boston Bruins. A little bit of uncertainty when you look at, they lost Torrey Krug, one of their top defensemen. Pasternak and Marchand could miss the start of the season, even if it gets pushed back. We'll see. They're probably not playing on opening night in the lineup on the top line for Boston. And then when you look at 2021 unrestricted free agents, Tuukka Rask is on that list and Yaroslav Halak is on that list. So this may be a turning point for worse for Boston. I still think they're equipped to be one of the best teams in the league, but that's kind of hanging over their heads, the uncertainty beyond this season. And they also still haven't brought back Chara quite yet officially, you know?
So there's uncertainty with Boston. I would even argue there's a little uncertainty with Colorado at three, just because Grubauer and Francois, you know, you don't really know who's going to be the regular season number one with now Grubauer having a little injury history and some shaky performance at times last season during the regular season. So the thing with uncertainty, though, is when I look at Boston and Colorado, they're just so safe. Like, you know, no matter what, no matter who's injured, that those teams are going to find a way to win. Where the real uncertainty, I think, lies is when you're actually selecting a goalie from the tandem of either the New York Islanders at number four or the Columbus Blue Jackets at number five. I had somebody DM me over the weekend is like, hey, I'm next up in a fantasy draft and I just have trouble taking Korpisalo here around like the 115 range. And I said, you just got to do it. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Columbus is a team that has a lot to gain this year, even more than last season. I think their offense shined a lot. I think they're going to benefit from the Domi trade. I know it feels bizarre to maybe see them at five on our list now, Pete, but I would really try not to hesitate when drafting those guys.
Yeah, the one guy from the Islanders and Columbus that I would hesitate to take too early is Varlamov, just because of his career inconsistency. And Sorokin, once he starts playing, could even the start gap rather quickly. So, and again, I'm high on Sorokin. You are too, Robbie. But the reason we are is that Barry Trotz has made magic out of Varlamov, Robin Lehner, right? Thomas Greiss, goalies that were pedestrian or very inconsistent in their careers prior to joining the Islanders. He has yet to have that bona fide number one goalie of the future prospect. And for this guy who's only 25 years old, coming over with the success of Russian goalies in the NHL in recent years, I mean, I just love what I see. I love the blend. I love the marriage. I think it's going to work.
For sure. I feel the same way about the Islanders. Again, it's when they're on the draft board and you're actually selecting them, it doesn't feel as good as a Colorado goalie, as a Boston goalie, as a Vegas goalie. But you have to keep in mind that they deliver now with Barry Trotz, the Islanders. You know exactly what you're going to get. They're not going to, you know, score a lot of goals. That's fine, but they're going to stop a lot of pucks. So when you look at drafting goalies, especially if you're looking to get a tandem like Varlamov and Sorokin, which is certainly doable this season in fantasy, I think you can put your chips in that basket. Now, it's the gray area for me on this list, Pete, is when you have a true number one, like Vasilevsky for the Lightning, but then you have a murky situation at number two, like a Curtis McElhinney. Of course I went Vasi. I want him in the top 10 if I'm drafting like 8, 9, or 10. I want him right there, no question. But McElhinney, there's a lot of questions about, you know, older age. Can he handle more starts this season? You just don't know. So while we have them at 6 on the list, there's almost that gray area in terms of tandem this season, especially if it's condensed.
And that's what we saw happen with, I mean, the injury to Bishop and the injury news and the long timetable and everything like that happened in the offseason. But we had them penciled in to be the third goalie tandem on this list ahead of Colorado, who they beat in the playoffs. But then all of a sudden you take away Bishop, even though we like Khudobin like we like Vasilevsky on an individual basis as a top 15 fantasy goalie for Khudobin. You know, you just can't have that level of confidence in the Dallas Stars from their team goaltending tandem now that is, you know what, Khudobin and Jake Ettinger. Mm-hmm. It's just not the same ring to it. It's not the same security net, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's not a lot of grace period now. If the games are going to be, you know, more back-to-backs or shorter rest, you just can't, you cannot roll the dice too much at this position. You know, you got to get the tried and true number one, and you have to get a capable number two in fantasy. And, you know, hey, if you can get a guy, like we said, Cam Talbot, that's all well and good. But if you really want to make a difference in fantasy this season, if you can get a number one that you trust wholeheartedly, and then you get a number two on maybe a sneakier team, there's nothing wrong with that this season. You just have to make sure you're going to get enough starts. That's why I like the idea of a tandem, because I know that that team, I'm getting every one of their games, Pete. Now, that being said, the caveat there, just so you don't get too high on the tandems this year, if teams have extended time off this season, you know, if they, let's say they play 2 weeks on, 1 week off, you can't have just a tandem from the New York Islanders, because you might have a week without goalie start. So I just need to throw that caveat out there before you go all in on one team.
That's an interesting caveat. We don't know how long the season's going to be, what the format's going to be, how it's all going to be aligned. I'll say this. We talked about Stanley Cup hangovers. A team, when I see the point total for the season, however many games are played, we don't know. Dallas Stars, I will take the under. I will take the under because of the injuries. Sagan, Bishop, Pete doesn't have the same ring to it. That's not even the same stratosphere, that goalie tandem.
Yeah.
Khudobin had a nice little run in the playoffs, but this isn't Khudobin, Bishop, Khudobin and Ettinger. They're going to take a little dip there. I'll take the under with the Dallas Stars point total. Whatever it's set at, however many games we play, however the season is aligned, I'll take the under there.
Right. And when you're talking about divisional alignment, we have ingrained in our heads that, you know, Buffalo has a chance to contend in the Atlantic and the Devils are another overlooked team in the Metro, which is absolutely loaded. But remember, if there's a different alignment, it could either help or hurt teams like that. I don't think I would like, you know, Buffalo as much if they got grouped into the Metro type division with those teams. And if the Devils were in a, you know, in a different alignment, maybe you'd like them a little bit more. So again, don't do your fantasy draft until you know that those type of details, because that is really what it's all about. For if a team actually has a chance to contend in its division, that's where you can look at bounce back appeal and how sneaky a team really is, and get your final decision made, I think.
Exactly. And one maybe debate I just want to throw out here that we were talking about, Pete, is the Washington Capitals timeshare of Ilya Samsonov and Henk Lundqvist versus the Vancouver Canucks of Braden Holtby and Thatcher Demko. We have the Capitals at 9 overall, and we have the Canucks at 10 overall. I think this one is really comparable because you have two teams with a lot of offensive upside. You have some pretty good defense. Vancouver improved by adding Nate Schmidt. We know he could play with Quinn Hughes, which would be phenomenal for those two individuals together. And I think it would benefit the goalies a lot. So I think you have the Capitals here. I would give them the slight edge just because of history. But you could really argue that now Demko looking solid in the postseason, that the Canucks, you know, might take that spot for them, if not this season, but the next.
Yeah, this is a big year for the Canucks for sure, because now they're, like we've said on previous shows, they have kind of the target on their backs. They were probably the breakout team of the postseason in terms of young teams taking the next step and knocking off the defending champs in the St. Louis Blues. This is a key year as well for them salary cap wise, because after this year, they're going to have to sign Pettersson, Demko, and Quinn Hughes. Their entry-level contracts all expire after this year, for what it's worth. So this is a big opportunity here. After this year, you're going to see the dollar values associated with the ceilings of those players long-term, less so on the cheap, where they could really do some damage in the playoffs. So yeah, I don't know. It's kind of old versus young a little bit. I would kind of lean toward a tandem, like instead of the Capitals, I would lean toward a tandem like the Rangers or even the Canucks over them. But it's a very tight debate. That's just how I would approach it. I kind of like those other teams' tandems a little bit more.
It might be hard this season, if it is condensed, to come in as a goalie that's trying to solidify himself as one of the best in the league, like Samsonov has the pedigree to do, just because they're going to need to rely on him in different situations this season. The problem with the Capitals, and this is probably a champagne problem, let's be honest here, but is that Henrik Lundqvist, you just could not start this guy in fantasy last season. You couldn't do it. Even the season before, it was 50-50. So that's where I say, okay, Samsonov is going to need to be the guy right away. Whereas you have Thatcher Demko with the grace period of a Braden Holtby who can start any night and win any game, as far as I'm concerned. So I think that's the one thing to look out for Washington. Now, this conversation could be all well and over in the second week if Samsonov starts great, looks great. That book is going to be closed because his upside is way higher than any one of those guys we were talking about. So again, just be careful when you're getting into the goalie tandem with Washington. Hank just did not live up to fantasy relevance the last season.
You're right, Rob. It is going to be difficult for goalies to kind of stand out and be the number one. I want to go back real quick. Let's just consider this. Say there's an Atlantic division, quote unquote Atlantic division. All right, we're talking about four divisions in the league. Boston, Buffalo, Carolina, New Jersey, New York Islanders, New York Rangers, Philadelphia, and Washington. Where is Buffalo in the hierarchy of those teams? They might be near the bottom. The Devils are at the bottom, and then the Sabres are right above them, because that is an impossible division. So we're talking about the Buffalo Sabres on the up and up, but they're playing those teams all the time. It's going to be tough for them.
Yeah, they would have to fight tooth and nail just to be in the conversation for a playoff spot. I really wouldn't like that development too much for the Sabres, and especially with the pressure that they're facing. I mean, right, they just re-upped guys like Olofsson and Reinhart, but they're going to have to pay Dahlin after this season. Another disappointing season could mean Jack Eichel is disappointed and, you know, frustrated even more so than he's already been over the past 2 years. And their goalie tandem comes off the books this year, but the more important thing is that Taylor Hall comes off the books. And if Taylor Hall's out of the picture, things look a lot worse next year. So that pressure, like kind of last year with the Devils having Taylor Hall, his contract expiring, hanging over their heads, they did not deliver after improving in the offseason. So if the Sabres are in that type of a divisional alignment, I could see Devils 2.0 happening here.
It's scary to think about that, Bob, honestly, because if the Sabres have one more disappointing regular season, it could be blown up there. So I think it's that you bring up a good point, because as high as that we're getting on them as being the most improved team in fantasy, if the division doesn't go their way, which it certainly may not, it could be bad in Buffalo, and it could not work out there with Taylor Hall. So I love that you brought that up. I do think Ullmark has intrigue, Bob, but when you're looking at goalies, I think the Devils have a lot more to offer with Blackwood and Crawford, because Blackwood did it last year against the top teams. He looked great. And Crawford actually had really good numbers, Bob. If it wasn't for their shaky defense, he could have been among the league leaders.
Yeah, I would take the Devil. I was dogging the Devils a few episodes ago. Blackwood, you know, when are you going to show me anything? But I would take that tandem over Buffalo. And that this is a perfect point. If you're drafting your teams before you know what the alignment is and what the schedule is, there can't be anyone listening to the show that is drafting a team before that happens. If you are, you have an issue, because this is all going to play out in the coming weeks, and it's all going to be very, very different. It will make for a fun, different sort of fantasy drafting strategy. So hold tight, wait till we get all the plans in place, how many games we're playing, where the divisions are aligned. It's going to be fun, different, and interesting, but these are things you have to consider when you're drafting a fantasy team, is what team is going to be in this division or that division, and what are the matchups going to be on a regular basis, because they're going to play those teams over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, and I think one good example of one of the teams that were highest on this year, the Colorado Avalanche, you look at their contract situations heading into 2021, Grubauer, potential UFA, Landeskog, also Brandon Saad, who they just acquired from the Blackhawks. And then you look at the divisional possibility of them maybe being in the same division as the Vegas Golden Knights. Maybe they wouldn't run away with the league standings, like I was saying a couple episodes ago. So just another example, you start reading between the lines, start doing a little bit more research, and then looking at what might be coming ahead, and your opinion might be tweaked a little bit.
Yeah, imagine the Pacific Division, Anaheim, Arizona, Colorado, Dallas, Los Angeles, Minnesota, San Jose, Vegas. They play each other, what, 6 or 7 times? It's going to be different, but it should be fun. It will be cool to see these teams go in and maybe play a 3-game series like baseball. So again, we don't know what the details are going to be. We're holding out hope that we get the season started ASAP, but keep an eye on it. Stay tuned. And this stuff changes, you know, it will change your draft strategy. What you said maybe an episode ago may change now once we see the alignment and see how it shakes out.
With that alignment, Bob, that's going to be the Harlem Globetrotters there for the Golden Knights and the Avs. I mean, the only tough games are going to be playing each other. I mean, that's going to be, you know, wow.
Yeah, if you take out the Canucks, you take out the Flames, some of these strongish teams up there, the Oilers, right? If you put them in a Canadian division, you're looking at those
Canadian
two juggernauts beating each other up.
The Canadian division is like you're looking and trying to wrap your head around that thing. So it's the wild, wild west.
But we're going to have episodes rolling out every week now up until the start of the season. If we didn't get to anything that you want covered today, get at us on Twitter. I'm at NHL Reese. Pete is at NHL Jensen. Bobby's at Airchecked. And thank you for the few people that have left some new reviews. If you haven't yet and you've been listening to the show, please hit us up with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
For sure. And we're getting to the point in time where once we get the go-ahead about the number of games in the season, we have pretty much, you know, over 75% done. We have our projection stories for forwards, defensemen, and goalie team wins. Been working on those over the course of the 31-31 team preview series, where you can find the team rankings, team previews on nhl.com/fantasy, in addition to everything else we're doing fantasy-wise, getting you ready for the start of the season. So again, for Bender, Reese, Pete Jensen, we'll talk to you again next time, hopefully soon for the projections front. Thanks for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice.